Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on my podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And joining me today is nobody. This is an episode that I'm doing by myself. I'm catching up with some books that I've read recently. I say recently, up until like a few months ago. Me and Juliana were kind of falling behind on some of these episodes. And of course, when we do an episode together, we want to talk about a book that we've both read or something that I'm excited to talk about to Juliana for the first time. And the point of this series of books, or this series of podcasts, where I'm going to talk about books which I've read before. And so the idea is that books that I've read and Juliana and I've talked about on the podcast before, I will just kind of do an update. I'll do a reread of a book and listen back then to the previous podcast that we talked about this on. So we've already talked about this book that we're doing that I'm talking about today. It's called The Quantum Magician, and me and Juliana talked about it back in February 2019 on episode 389 of the SFBRP. And the reason I'm rereading I'm trying to reread quite a few books now is that made a list back on episode 550 of the SFBRP must reads list, which turned out to be like 52 books, with the idea is that if you read one book per week, you can get a really good overview of science fiction. Stuff going all the way back, you know, like a long way back into history, you know, starting off with like the War of the Worlds and things like that, and coming all the way through to the modern day. So it's hopefully a good overview of not just the classics, not just the list that everyone always comes up with, but like books that still stand the test of time, and more modern books which could maybe still stand the test of time into the future. And so what I want to do is reread books that I've read more recently, or I've only ever read once, and these are like some first rereads here to talk about. And because me and Juliana have already talked about this book, as I said, I thought I would re-listen to the previous podcast and then give an updated review of this book as a second read. That's kind of important in this one, because after listening back through to the previous podcast, which I just did a few hours ago, Juliana was like, oh no, I want to read this, so don't spoil it. So I didn't do any spoilers, and I think I can actually talk about it again without any spoilers, because I kind of want to talk about what this book is doing rather than what the twists and turns are or what the outcome is. Let's talk about The Quantum Magician. It was released in, let me quickly go over to Goodreads. So yeah, at the end of 2018, and then as a literary awards, it was a Locus Award nominee for first novel, and the Prix Aurora Award nominee for best novel in English, which is a Canadian science fiction award, and Derek Kunskin is Canadian. As a first novel, it's very, very good. And I always love first novels where someone's got loads and loads of ideas, and then all of those books go into this. So this is a book packed full of ideas and packed full of themes and packed full of all of that kind of stuff. So anyway, the SFBRP must reads list. Let's quickly go back here. Where it says, which books are the best examples of science fiction available to read today? That is this. Which books are the best for those wanting a deeper dive into science fiction? I think this is actually a really good candidate for that. And then it says, which old books stand the test of time and which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come, which is what I just said before as well. So yes, also it says every novel contains many subgenres and ideas and influences. We gave each book in the list a linked topic to award reading pairs or groups of books. And so, yes, this is in the space opera section. But like I say, every work of fiction can have many labels attached. And in this case, it's a heist book, which is a science fiction book. And I was kind of thinking about, like, is this more of a heist book or is it more of a space opera science fiction book? And I think you should probably lead with space opera, because while it is heist, you know, and people are saying on Goodreads, it's sort of like, oh, yes, it's whatever, you know, Interstellar mixed with Inception mixed with Ocean's 11. I think it's kind of also, as well as a heist, it's like a military caper. So it's not just sort of like you want to steal something, but you want to kind of pull off a cool military engagement. And I think this is given away quite a bit by the name of the author, which when I first did a review of this, when we talked about this back in 2019, I didn't talk about it then, but the main character is called Belisarius. And then more recently, when I was reading these books, which is sort of like 16 ways to defend a castle, and it's all about Constantinople and Byzantine stuff. And I went back and listened to this podcast series called, I think, 12 Byzantine Rulers or whatever it is. And there they also talked about Justinian and his general Belisarius, who was a military leader who would pull off these quirky victories where he would trick people into giving up their city, and like it was all he's all double crossing people and pulling off these kind of like military capers. I don't even know what to say. So it's less heist. It's less about heists and more about clever military maneuvers. And that's what this book is. So the overall world that you're setting up is a very space opera-y kind of thing. And like a lot of my favorite space operas style things, it doesn't take the easy way out and say, oh, there's aliens here and then aliens over there and humans are just one part of it. It goes in the tradition of like Dune and these other things where like everybody there is based on humans. I mean, in this case, there was some aliens in the past or some other intelligences which seeded the galaxy with lots of portholes, not portholes, like these gateways that you can go through, portal gateway kind of things, so you can get around very quickly. And that's where a lot of the space opera-ing comes through. It's sort of like, right, we've got to get this ship through this porthole, and this porthole opens up into this city, and then there's another porthole over here. And it's more about sort of like getting through things. So these like these different portholes where there's only one thing, or there's only one way between two different places, they become like these military pinch points, like the Suez Canal or Gibraltar or whatever other thing that you want to get ships through, kind of sneak ships through, or have a battle to get through. So that's the kind of like setup. But inside the world, there are only humans and various kind of like breeds of humans or genetically engineered versions of humans. And then the rest of the world, or the rest of the, the political factions are all of these like countries or like unions or whatever you say that have set off from Earth, and the people there are just like left over. So you get some places which speak French or French 8.0 or whatever. They have these like long distant French language descendants as well, and there's other Spanish ones, and then there's the one of the main factions is the Sub-Saharan Union, and they want to get something through a porthole controlled by the puppets, and then they want to sneak past the Congregate. So lots of different factions, and I kind of want to lead with the space opera-y kind of stuff, a space opera stuff, because that is like the background of the heist. And then the heist itself is what's really satisfying about this is that every single like element of the heist has a science fiction idea or theme behind it. And that makes it a very satisfying heist, because it isn't just sort of like, here, we're in a space opera world, or in a science fiction world, or in a future world, and then a normal heist happens where it's sort of like, oh, and that person has to pick a lock, and this person has to distract that person, and then, whatever you want it to be, this really leans into, okay, each character is a type or a way to explore a different type of future humanity. And every element that's there is another element of science fiction. I don't really want to give too much away. I just want to explain why this makes it onto the science fiction book review podcast must read list. Spoiler, I'm reading these books also to check if they should remain on the list, or maybe I was just really enthusiastic about the time, and with a reread or a re-listen in this case, maybe it doesn't stand the test of time and I'm like, oh no, take that one off the list. But no, this one's definitely staying on the list. So as space opera, it's pretty good, it's pretty fun. As a heist, it's quite good. But then as a science fiction space opera heist, it kind of brings out the strengths of heist and science fiction and space opera. Of course, space opera is a kind of science fiction. I'm just saying that like within a space opera world, there's a very good science fiction heist in the middle of it. So again, I don't want to give away too much, but it starts off and there's like the Sub-Saharan Union fleet goes off on this long-ranging thing, and they come back with some very advanced technology. Again, I'm not going to give away where they found this very advanced technology, but they've got it and they're like, well, we need to get it back because we're at war, or we want to be at war, or there might be a war with the congregate, and this technology, advanced technology, is going to swing this war in our favor, but we want to get there quickly, and the quickest way through is through this gateway portal, which goes through a city, which is controlled by the puppets, and they're like, who can we get? And they go and find Belisarius, and Belisarius is like, they're like, hey, you're the heist guy, aren't you? You're the guy who can get away with this. But we're not sure if you are, because you've never been caught, or you've never been convicted on any of these things. And he's like, well, I'm the guy that you need then. And they're going to pay him by giving him an amazing spaceship, which has got this new technology, which he can either keep or he can then sell on to the highest bidder. And so that kind of sets up the story. And he's pretty much like, right, I am now going to find the list. You know, I'm gonna pad out my team. So he's the brains, he's the mastermind, he's the Belisarius guy. And then he's like, well, I need someone who's gonna help with the planning and the computing and all that kind of stuff. So he gets one of his childhood friends, Cassandra. So she comes in as the second brains behind it. And then like, well, I need a driver. I need a pilot. So I get this. He gets a guy to do that. He's like, well, I need an explosives expert. I need a double agent. I need a hacker. I need a logistics guy. I need a fall guy. And he gets one of every one of the 11 that you need in your Ocean's 11, you know, one of each person as well. So and each one of these characters kind of represents a different part of humanity. You kind of got the base line humans as well, like William, who is this previous generation con man who has got this this very difficult to manage disease, which he's definitely going to die from in the future. And Belisarius goes up to William and says, all right, come with me for one last big gig. You might not survive it, but you're not going to survive anyway. And William's like, yep, going to come with you. The hacker is an AI called Saint Matthew, which is who uses a portrait. I think it's a Caravaggio portrait as his avatar. And he's the guy who can, you know, hack in this and find out this information as well. He's like one of the most super advanced AI systems ever, and has got history with Belisarius. Yeah. And then you get these other forms of humans. One is the puppets, and this is like one of my favorite parts of this book, is exploring the different attitudes, and in this case the religions of future, like, science fiction religions. So the puppets are programmed to worship other people. They were called the Divine or the Newman, and with the idea being that the Newman give off a certain pheromone, and the puppets, who are like these half-size, 1 meter tall human variations, can't help but worship them and do everything that they want. But this kind of turns into, well, just about as bad as you'd expect. The puppets rise up and take control over the Divine Newman and pretty much domesticate them. So they've domesticated their own gods, which is very, very funny. And they're just like, they just keep farming the Divine Newman, who are, again, another part of they've also modified their genes, so they have the right pheromones that the puppets worship them and do everything they want. But it gets flipped on its head. And this is some, like, proper, like, disturbing writing in this section, where you come across the puppets and what their religion is. And it's like, not, it's like hop, it's like really horrific. And it's quite funny, because I just looked up Derek Kunskin's website, and it says, I write science fiction, fantasy, and sometimes accidentally horror. And I'm like, yeah, this is the bit in the book. It's like super horrific and really fun, but also super disturbing and horrific, how the puppets treat their own gods. But it's really, really fun. The way that the scriptures work is, like, again, amazing, disturbing, really good fun there. And on the other side of that, you get the quantum the Homo Quantus, the quantum humans, which is what Belisarius is, although he's kind of defective and he can't do this without risk. And they, each of these quantum humans, have these magnetic resonance cells throughout their nervous system, like these little bits of metal in them or something in their cells. and then they can excite them different ways and, you know, control electric fields or feel electric fields. But really, they've been designed to be able to observe quantum states in experiments and in the universe without being conscious of it. And so they can keep observing and find out about quantum states and also kind of like think about different things without collapsing quantum states. Again, Belisarius can do this, but it hurts him. And then Cassandra, his childhood friend, who's also a quantum, she's very good at it. And she has to like put effort into not being in a quantum trance. But between the two of them, they can look out into the future and plan stuff and plan different things and also help reroute starship planning and paths and stuff. And that's what when the Sub-Saharan Union bring in Belisarius, that's what they think he's going to do. They're like, well, we need someone who can compute these routes to get through here. And he's like, well, I'm going to do this my way, in a way that you don't expect, but come along on this journey with me and I'm going to solve your problem. The other kind of humanity that's there is the pilot called Stripe, I think, or Strike. Can't remember. Didn't make a note of it. But he's like a whale man, like a manatee-looking human who's in this highly pressurized tank. The idea is that he can go deep underwater and put up with high pressures, which is what you need if you're in a starship that's pulling 60 Gs. You need your body not to get crushed by this. So that's all the pilots are, these people who can think in three dimensions and put up with high pressures, which you need. So he's one of those kind of guys. And and there's others as well, but those are kind of the main forms of humanity in the future. So you get this big team together and you go on a big heist. So again, all of this stuff is really fun, and like the diversions into pondering religion of the puppets' religion, and then the kind of more aesthetic quantum kind of people who aren't religious, but like the way they live is they're all like these in monasteries kind of thing. And then there's Saint Matthew, who is he's an artificial intelligence who is conscious, and he's like, I have a soul, right? And everyone's like, no, you're just a program. He's like, but no, I have to have a soul. And he believes in intelligent design is like saying, oh, what if the only job of humans was to one day make a machine that has a soul in it, and then I can, you know, spread the soul throughout the rest of... Anyway, it's just really fun, all of these different things, these different, like say, noodling parts of the book where you go off into talking about religion as well. Again, not really expected in a book which is a science fiction book. It's a very balanced book. It's very satisfying. I do think there's some issues with the pacing throughout the book, and looking at some other people's Goodreads reviews, other people are like, yeah, could have been a bit clearer and like picked up a bit at the end. But I do think there's just so much to do at the end that it does get a little bit bogged down into some of the more kind of spaceship battle tactic stuff. And you think, well, we should be paying off the heist here, shouldn't we? Like, there's a heist going on. And it seems to be a little bit too, bogged down in some, you know, spaceship maneuvering. And we're like, no, but we've already got what we want. Anyway, some other good stuff at the start, some fun, puts in some little ideas at the start about, I don't need to go into it. Like, again, the joy of this book is trying to work out what's going on and/or if this is the second time you've read it, like my time through this time, it's a real job to see all of that groundwork being put in place. And this is what I talked about in the previous podcast, which you shouldn't, well, you can listen to it if you want to just have this same kind of talk, but with me and Juliana discussing it backwards and forwards. But the there's like these two different parts of the book, which I think is really good. One is like the tactics involved within the story and within the characters within the story, with Belisarius, who's a gambler, and he's like saying, well, sometimes you play the game, like you play by the rules to try and win, and sometimes you play the player, which is playing like looking at the board, but then also seeing how you can disrupt or play around the board and go directly towards the player that you're playing against. And he says, or sometimes you just have to roll the dice. In other words, put aside everything else, just roll the dice and stack the odds in your favor, or hope the odds come out in your favor. So play the game, play the player, or just roll the dice, which is great because that's happening happening within the book, but then there's this other kind of thing which has happening outside of the book, or between, in this case, the author of the book and the reader of the book. Because sometimes when you're reading these books, and I find this quite often when I'm reading books which, again, don't want to talk anyone down, but books which are never going to get onto the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast must reads list, let me put it that way, where I'm reading, I'm just sort of like, oh, the person who's writing this just either hasn't read enough other science fiction, or doesn't understand what the job of a science fiction book is, or what a heist book is, or whatever fiction is, and they're just writing something and they don't understand what their job is. And there's never a moment where they're thinking it all the way through, because the way that you can look at it is sort of like, go, okay, am I as clever as the characters in the book who are being fooled by the people doing the heist? And you're like, well, no, of course I'm cleverer than them because I have more information than them. And you say, okay, am I as clever as the characters in the book who are fooling the other people? And you're like, yeah, because I know everything that they know. But then you've got to think, am I as clever as the mastermind of this whole heist, as Belisarius, because he knows everything. He knows everything that's going on there. And so is he fooling me? And I'm like, well, yes, of course he's fooling me, because he is this, he's a character who has more information than me as well. And also his superpower is to be able to, you know, look into the quantum future of things and work out all the different things and, you know, sway those things in his favor. So yes, he should be, he should be more intelligent than me, but that's again still working inside the text of the book. And so then the next thing is sort of like, am I cleverer than the author of the book? And in this case, no, I'm not, because Derek Kunskin understands that it's his job as the author of a science fiction heist to be cleverer than me, and also he spent more time thinking through all these different things, so yes, he should be more clever than me. But then the last thing is like, does the author even know that my intelligence as a reader has to be factored into all of these equations? And as I said in the previous podcast that I recorded with Juliana about this, I really enjoy it when an author knows the intelligence level or the possible intelligence levels of the readers that he has and knows how to play with that, like within the text of the book. And I talked a lot about before about like always thinking, oh, this could happen, that could happen, and then literally the next page, or you know, 5 minutes later in the audiobook, that thing happens. I'm like, ah, I'm being clever. And then I'm like, I'm not being clever. Derek Kunskin as the author is being clever, or it's not just he's being clever, he knows what his job is to do. And some things which are mentioned really early on in the book and then aren't mentioned for a while, I'm thinking, well, I'm sure this is going to come back in later in the book. And then when it does, I'm like, ah, that's very satisfying. And I'm like, yo, of course it's satisfying, because Derek Kunskin knows that he has to satisfy people who are reading at different levels of the book. Some people are just going to be fooled, like the characters being fooled, or the characters doing the fooling, or they want to think that they're as clever as the mastermind. But again, it's a really good balance, and the books that I like the most play... Well, it's not that I want them to be cleverer than me, but I want them to, I want to see that the author is doing a job to know that he can satisfy different readers of different intelligence levels, which then I read some other books and I'm just sort of like, oh, right, you think your job is to tell a fun story, but I'm too clever for you. I'm not too clever for you. I've just read more stories than you, or I've read more science fiction than you, or just kind of like as an avid reader, you just get used to it. You can do this with movies as well. You can start quoting movies or the next line, like, oh, I know as much about what makes a satisfying line here as the screenwriter. You just get to know that kind of stuff, and it feels like a good author, or one who can write a challenging book, can understand that and write at all these different levels. And the level for this is, I would say, is it a perfect balance for me? Is it perfectly pitched at me? Or is it well enough written that I can enjoy it at the same level as anybody else can, who maybe they've never read a heist book before, they don't know what the form is, they've never read a book with all these other science fiction-y kind of stuff going in there. So yeah, lots of stuff going on in this book, and enough to satisfy, hopefully, everyone at every level. Unless, again, maybe if this is your first science fiction, space opera book, or your first heist book, maybe it can be a bit confusing. And like I say, some of it gets a bit bogged down at the end. I'm like, am I meant to be drawing diagrams of these portholes and where it, no, portholes, these portal gateway kind of things? Because maybe that's the only way to understand it. So anyway, I think that's everything. That's all of my notes. Let's head over to, I'm going to keep the rating of this at 4.5 stars, because even with a read through, I really enjoyed this. Oh, I didn't make a note of this as well, is that, and I've mentioned this on a few recent podcasts, is that, like, I feel like this book is another example of I should have written some notes down about this. But as I had mentioned before in my previous review, which was about let me just bring it up here. What was the last episode? I should have made some notes about this. So the last episode that we did was, oh yeah, Agent Tchaikovsky, The City of Last Chances and The House of Open Wounds. And that is like a really good one of these found, or there are some like found family kind of elements of this as well, like disparate people get together. And in that case, I was saying like he's using proper fantasy ideas to have like, you know, the cast of characters that you want from found family who don't fit in with their own worlds, or don't fit in with their own societies, or are rejected by their own thing, and then they all come together and they can all, you know, want different things but like value each other. And I kind of like use those different things as an example of like, oh right, a lot of these books just have someone who is, I don't know, has this, you know, neuro atypicality or neurodivergence or whatever you want to say. And I find it sometimes a little bit too plain, where they're just sort of like the characters explaining to each other. I'm just talking about like a Becky Chambers Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which we talked about a few months ago, I think, you know, in September, October. And I just find it a bit plain where it's just all stated like, oh, yes, and this person is like this, and this person is like this. And Agent Tchaikovsky is like, it's kind of so much more satisfying to me for it just not to be like spelled out so plainly, like, and this person represents autism, and this person represents this, and this person, or this person is autistic, or this person, it does have bipolar, and this person is. And I'm like, yeah, okay, great, we can have all that together. But it, again, it's good that those people can be represented, and it's good that those people can be there in the story. But again, I don't feel like it's that it is a science fiction book is bringing out anything. So I'm like, oh yeah, and this person is an alien, and they're nothing like humans, and they've got a completely different background, but they might as well just be the, you know, whatever bubbly personality fashion person. And I'm like, oh right, okay, doesn't actually add anything here at all. But what I want to say about this book is, reading it again, I'm like, ah, right, this is Long Way to an Angry, like, there's actually a small angry planet, and they actually did go the long way round, and we do have a crew that gets together, and they've all got different attitudes and different things going on. And you're like, okay, I'm not going to map any of these things onto anyone who's got any neuroatypical neurodivergence or anything like that, because it isn't explicitly stated if any of these match up with anything in the book. But I just want to say that this book it feels like it's doing a little bit more, or it can go in different directions to talk about some of these things. For example, Cassandra and how she is like, again, I think this is more explicit in the book, that the autism is kind of genetically engineered into the Homo Quantus people, the quantum humans. I find that exploration of like, okay, no, let's lean into the science fictionality of this to really bring it out, rather than just having one person is sort of like, oh yes, and that person is on the autism spectrum, and so we've got to treat them like this, said this character. Now I'm at the end of my notes. 4.5 stars. Let's head over to, what's this tab here? Audible. Yes, this is a narrated by T. Ryder Smith. Yeah, 2018 book, 13 hours and 8 minutes. I think it could be a bit shorter than that. Let's say it should have been 12 hours if they'd have trimmed down a bit at the end. What's that? Google, Derek Kunzke, and there is a website. What's this one? Let's bring up the Goodreads page. I just looked at some of these things here as well. Ryan rated it 5 stars. It's a heist story, and it's a heist story set in the future and in space. He says, this book is smart, but not too smart. It's hard science fiction with the accessibility of, insert blockbuster Hollywood movie title here. Kunzgun manages to interweave big sci-fi ideas into a simple heist story without breaking away horribly from the tried and tested formula or feeling clunky and bloated. It's masterfully done. I think it's really great that he does mostly stick to this heist story formula. It's tried and tested. And again, in the previous episode, about this. Me and Juliana got into this kind of like, I actually want people or want storytellers to stick to the tried and tested formula. I like the formulas. It's not that something's formulaic, but you don't have to reinvent the formula. You can just tell the best example of a science fiction, space opera, heist, military caper story. And I think that's what this is, and that's why it's going on to, and that's why it's staying on the SFBRP must read list. Diva Diane rated it 4.5 stars. One quibble is that his narration pace is painfully slow until it gets exciting, and then it's not. And I talked about that in the previous podcast, that T. Ryder Smith, he talks quite slowly, and then it gets exciting and stuff happens, and there's a fight scene, and he gets really quick, and he starts talking, and then everything calms down again. A little pet peeve of mine, but, like, not a massive thing. Stephen rated it 4 stars. Lots of 4 stars. Lots of 5 stars here. Rick gave it 5 stars. The first time I listened to an audiobook, it was good, though I went too fast and skimmed a few sections. On this read, I took my time going back and forth on chapters and simply enjoying the biological extrapolations and cool science fiction inventions. It was well worth it. Kept my mind off COVID side effects, too. Easily 5 stars. Yeah. So lots of people have read this since we reviewed it in 2019, because I guess it came out in 2018, end of 2018. We reviewed it on the beginning of 2019. So, yeah, lots of reviews since then. Lots of good reviews. Overall, rating on Goodreads, 3.98, which isn't fantastically high. Either way, I ended my previous review by saying, I want more stuff in this universe. Let's get the team back together, or maybe go off in a different direction and have a different team. And since then, other books have come out. The Quantum Magician is the first book. The second book is The Quantum Garden. I rated it 4.5 stars as well, so I probably really enjoyed that. Thing is, I don't remember anything about it, but I rated it highly. And then the next book in this series is called the Quantum Garden. Oh no, that's the second one. Then The Quantum War, and I rated it 2.5 stars. And I don't remember anything about it. But there you go. There are some other related books, The House of Sticks and The House of Saints, which I guess I should probably read, because I've never read those, and if I'm giving some of these books 4.5 stars, I should probably give Derek Kunzgen another chance in his Quantum Evolution series universe, which is The House of Sticks, so maybe I should get to that as well. But either way, I read the first book, 4.5 stars, made it to the SFBRP must-read list. Second book, another 4.5 stars, but I don't remember anything about it. The Quantum War, it drops off a lot there, so... sorry about the eagerly awaited third volume in the number one best-selling Quantum Evolution series. I probably won't reread if I didn't get into it that much. So there you go. I guess that'll be the end of this podcast. 32 minutes, a lot more efficient if I just stick to my notes and only do a few side bits as well. Yeah, SFBRP must reads. Rereads series. Let's have a look at my notes here. So I've... let's see what's coming up in the future. So yes, Quantum Magician as well. I'm currently rereading Anathem, which is a big book, and I'll do a review of that. I might even talk to Juliana about that, because that's a book that I didn't talk to her about. I also want to do a review of Ian M. Banks' Inversions, and that's one of the culture books, and me and Juliana have discussed that before, so I'll probably do a solo episode about that. Yeah, and then maybe I want to go back and talk about The Time Machine and Day of the Triffids. We've done other reviews of Day of the Triffids. We've done two previous episodes about Day of the Triffids, so I probably won't tell you that one, but maybe I'll talk about The Time Machine with Juliana, so we'll get to them as well. And I've got some other books still to read, but yes, coming up soon we will do I'll do a solo review of Inversions, maybe talk about The Time Machine and Day of the Triffids, because I have reread them this year as well. And then Anathem, which is a big chunky book, so we might do another one as well. And I also realized that I have never actually done an episode on War of the Worlds. I did talk about it, but it was an old SF audio podcast, so I do want to to get a proper mainline SFBRP H.G. Wells War of the Worlds episode, which I'll reread that probably next year. And yeah, and then there's other books that I want to reread to see if they stay on the if they get onto this list or stay on this list, which I've only read once before or haven't talked about for a long time, which is Keith Roberts' Pavan, H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, I just mentioned, The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick, Startide Rising by David Brin. I want to reread that. Cloud Atlas, The Martian, The Wool Omnibus, Ancillary Justice, The Fifth Season, and Emma Newman's Atlas Alone. So those are some other books that I want to reread within, well, let's say it this way. Before we get to episode 600, maybe, I'll want to reread those ones. So look out for some more discussion on Pavan, War of the Worlds, Man in the High Castle, Startide Rising, Cloud Atlas, The Martian, Wool Omnibus, Ancillary Justice, The Fifth Season, and Atlas Alone. Maybe. Either with Juliana, if we've not talked about it before on the podcast, or just me, if I just want to catch up with one of these kind of shorter solo episodes. Right, that's it from me. Thanks a lot for watching, and I'll catch you next time.